The Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. Sadly, our dream of an undefeated Bucks season is over, but holy smokes, if you saw the team play Sunday, you know that this is not... this is only getting better for the Milwaukee Bucks. They continue to show very encouraging signs. They are 8-1 heading into a four-game road trip that begins in Portland on Tuesday. We'll learn maybe a little bit more about this year's installment of the Milwaukee Bucks, but so far everything has been really, really good, even after incurring their first loss of the season on Thursday against the Boston Celtics. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. I'm going to be joined in moments by Matt Velasquez. He covers the Milwaukee Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We talked about two games, the Celtics game and the follow-up against the Sacramento Kings on Sunday, a game in which the Bucks crushed a pretty good Sacramento team, a team that had won five in a row, 144-109. It was a track meet and some pretty impressive plays, some great dunks by Giannis, and just a good old-fashioned whooping that has kind of characterized this Bucks team. They have led by at least 16 points in every one of their games except for the battle against Boston this season. That game did come down to the wire, 117-113 on November 1st. The Bucks again dropping their first game of the year, but it was decided in the final minute. I mean, the Bucks outscored the Celtics in the fourth quarter 35-24, and Boston hit 24 three-pointers. They finished within one of the NBA record for three-pointers in a game, and still the Bucks very nearly pulling out the upset that would have brought them to 8-0. They would at that point have beaten the other three teams in the East, largely considered the contenders for the conference championship, that being the Celtics, the Toronto Raptors, and the Philadelphia 76ers. They did beat Toronto without Kawhi Leonard and a couple other players, but of course, you may recall, the Bucks were missing Giannis Antetokounmpo in that game with a concussion, so still not a small feat. The Bucks have played a lot of games at home. Like we said, they go out on the road now for a four-game road trip, beginning in Portland, stop at Golden State. I mean, these are good teams that they're going to be playing, and I will certainly know just where this team stands. But taking a look back at the week that was with these two games against Boston, Giannis had 33 points and 11 rebounds. He was excellent once again. He missed a shot late in the game that could have tied it. It was a pretty exciting finish. He was right underneath the hoop and just making some ridiculous plays. Couldn't quite get that one to go down, and the Celtics were able to hold off the Bucks. 16 points apiece in that game from Chris Middleton and Malcolm Brogdon. Brogdon adding 6 rebounds as well. 13 points from Eric Bledsoe to go with 7 assists. They did, rather than go for 3, they were down 3 late and ended up going for 2-point plays on a couple occasions with time winding down under the last in the last 25 seconds of the game. Some people were critical of that. I did talk a little bit about that with Matt, so you might be interested to hear what he has to say. The Celtics put a bunch of people in double figures. 6 guys overall. Kyrie Irving had 28 points. Marcus Morris had 17. Al Horford was a problem. He had 18 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, stretched the floor with his ability to make the 3 a little bit. Gordon Hayward, 18 points, 5 assists. A typical performance from the Celtics. These are two teams that whose paths will cross again. These are maybe the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, certainly two of the best teams, and you know that they're going to cross paths again. Just have to kind of wait for it. The Bucks bounced back in a big way on Sunday against the Sacramento Kings, 144-109. Again, the Kings were a team that had won 5 straight games. Mike Budenholzer talked about this after the game. The Kings were on their own road trip, and they were kind of at the end of it. This was the last game, so it could be the schedule worked in Milwaukee's favor, and that Sacramento was maybe a little bit gassed at the end of this road trip, but still, just an overwhelmingly impressive performance. Obviously, Giannis is the start of it. 26 points, 15 rebounds, 11 assists. That is a triple-double. Did it in 30 minutes, didn't need to play the whole game, and was able to really rack up some impressive numbers. And if it's possible to have a quiet triple-double, this is how you do it. You have 6 other guys on your team, 7 other guys on your team in double figures, with Eric Bledsoe at 17, Ersan Ilyasova at 15, Pat Connaughton 13, 12 for Tony Snell and Chris Middleton, 13 for Malcolm Brogdon. Just a very balanced, impressive track meet of a performance that was pretty fun to watch. I mean, at times it was ugly, but if you're a Bucks fan, this was absolutely a great game to watch. This is where the Bucks are now. They're beating teams, even teams with pretty good records, that are perceptively in a lower tier than Milwaukee, and they are crushing them. and that was certainly the case at Pfizer Forum. Justin Jackson led the Kings with 22 points. Buddy Hield had 19, and De'Aaron Fox 15 to go with 6 assists and 6 rebounds. That guy's going to be an outstanding player out of Kentucky, a very complete point guard type of player. But the Bucks again, now 8-1 heading out west. So let's bring in Matt Velasquez. Let's talk about where this team stands and what we got coming up here in the next few games. Here now is Matt Velasquez. He covers the Milwaukee Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was there on Sunday when the Bucks picked apart the Sacramento Kings, an absolute blitz of 144-109 victory that moved the Bucks to 8-1 on the season. Yes, since we last chatted, they did lose their first game of the year. We thought that might happen at some point, and we'll certainly talk about Bucks Celtics. But let's start, first of all, with this Kings game. I mean, the Kings are kind of known for playing up-tempo, and even though people aren't going to think of the Sacramento Kings as a great team necessarily, they'd won 5 in a row. They got a lot of young talent. They play fast. You got the sense that the Bucks were pretty comfortable playing at that speed. Is that what you saw? I mean, did you think that was going to be easy pickings, a team trying to play at that tempo with a Bucks team that's just supremely confident right now?
Yeah, I think just looking at that Kings team, yes, they have a lot of young talent. They have a lot of athletic guys, but it's one of those situations where when you just compare rosters, you say, all right, if the Kings want to play fast, the Bucks have a better roster, you know, set up for playing fast. So if they want to play fast, you know, great, because the Bucks, you know, are playing fast, and the whole league is playing faster. You know, and part of that is the new rules, and part of that is just a style thing, but the Bucks can play fast, and they can beat you playing fast, and that's really what we saw on Sunday. Was, you know, the Bucks with their shooting, obviously 22 of 56 on threes, both franchise records in terms of makes and attempts. You know, they're really armed for, you know, being able to attack the paint either in the half court or in transition, kick out to shooters, knock down threes. I think I saw a stat somewhere that out of his 11 assists on Sunday, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 10 of them went to three-point shots, which is wild. But just as a team, you know, the Bucks just, you know, you kind of saw it on paper and it played out on the court. Just they're a better team than the Kings, as well as the Kings have been playing, and they really exercised that on Sunday.
Is this for real? I mean, it's not just that the Bucks are 8-1. They've had a 16-point lead on every team but one throughout the course of this start to the season. At most points, they're dominating teams. And I know they haven't necessarily had a gamut. They've got this West Coast road trip coming up that is going to be a heck of a test. But, I mean, are the Bucks just markedly better than the majority of teams in the NBA? You know, like, I'm starting to think this is legitimately as good as they're going to be this year if they remain healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, yes, I think they're better than most teams in the NBA. I think that's a fair, safe, reasonable thing to say. You look at their net rating is second only to the Warriors, and that's, you know, offensive efficiency rating and defensive efficiency rating kind of put together. Their net rating is 12.7, which is, they're basically 12.7 points per 100 possessions better than everyone else. If I'm reading that correctly, that may be slightly wrong, but the general idea is that the Bucks are just, you know, head and shoulders above teams at this point, 10% into the season. They're outscoring teams by a ton. You know, their wins have been huge. And they've played a bunch of good teams. It's not like they haven't, they've been playing a bunch of slouches. I mean, Charlotte, I think I said on the podcast last time or maybe on the radio or something, but Charlotte is, you know, kind of a, you know, an underrated team, and they beat them in the first game of the season on the road in a tight game. They've beaten the Sixers, the Pacers, the Raptors without Kawhi, you know, and they hung tight with the Celtics, playing a pretty bad game by all accounts, and still almost winning. You know, and then you look at the schedule they have coming up with their West Coast trip, and obviously we'll learn more about them then. But they definitely have the roster and the talent to continue this high level of play. I don't think, like, we're going to see a lot of games where the Bucks get blown out this year. I know that's something that happened a lot last year, where they got down by 10 or more points in more than half of their games. And I don't expect that trend will continue this year. It hasn't so far, because they just have so much firepower, and they're playing together, and they're playing defense, and they're getting defensive rebounds and completing those stops. Just all things that they haven't been doing in it, and there's no reason to believe that they can't continue doing those things.
I don't want to pile on Jason Kidd or Joe Prunty. I know there's a lot of fans in this market that are down on what those guys contributed when they were here. Is that really just the primary difference? I mean, you're talking about better defense, better everything. Is that really just Mike Budenholzer being that dramatically different from what came before that it can transform a team from, kind of stuck in spinning its wheels a little bit to being a team that's just blowing people away?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of the guys are the same. Obviously, if Jason Kidd had Brook Lopez and Ersan Ilyasova and Dante DiVincenzo and Pat Connaughton, the same roster they have now, maybe it'd be different. But I don't know. We know that John Henson wasn't going to be shooting threes under Jason Kidd. Like, we know
True.
that Chris Middleton would be shooting more mid-range shots than threes. It just happened for a lot of years there. So there are certain things that just would have been the same. The spacing didn't improve over time, even though they had a lot of shooters. I mean, and you can go with Giannis at the five, and at least in the past, that's how they would try and manufacture space by putting shooters around him. And even that lineup, as good as people wanted it to be, it didn't have positive numbers. And so I know the guys have been kind of outspoken, as Malcolm Brogdon being one of them, that the defense is vastly different. It's a lot simpler this year. There's less kind of scrambling and having to think about what you're doing and kind of battle with overthinking out there. Everyone knows what the process is. They know what they're expected to do, and they're able to just kind of focus on little things and doing those little fundamental things right, instead of having to constantly be aware of everything and kind of really struggling to kind of make a lot of decisions. So I think that coaching change has freed the Bucks up in a lot of different ways in terms of space, being able to do things more simply on defense, and just kind of unlocked a lot of the talent that was there.
Obviously, if Giannis goes down, this could fall apart. We're talking about health-wise. But we also saw Chris Middleton play just okay against the Kings, and they still threatened 150 points. And with everybody playing so well, it's kind of hard to tell where the indispensable parts are. You feel like if somebody goes down in that starting lineup, there's somebody coming off the bench who honestly could match what the guy in front of him is doing. Is there anybody else, though? And Chris Middleton is probably the easy answer here, but is there anybody else that you really view on this team as completely indispensable, that if that guy gets hurt or if something happens, that's going to cause a lot of problems for this Bucks team?
I think you kind of hit it right on the head there, that would be Chris Middleton. I think that you could look at Brook Lopez too, as granted, he didn't have a great day yesterday, but in general, his value on both ends in terms of being able to stretch the court on offense and also being able to either get rebounds or clear space for other guys to get rebounds on defense while also being a stout physical presence inside. That's been a huge boost for the Bucks in the middle. I think John Henson has had a great start to the season, but part of that comes from playing those limited minutes and being able to be a major difference maker during that kind of limited time as a player off the bench. I think he fits well with the bench unit, and he can mesh with the starting unit too. But when you're playing 18 to 23 minutes a game, whatever it is, you can have more of that impact as opposed to having to kind of slog out 20, 30 minutes a game or whatever that he was doing in the past. So I think Brook Lopez could make a negative impact if he were hurt. That would definitely be felt. But most importantly, the Bucks just need to stay healthy, as is every team. I mean, injuries are going to come and go. Every team deals with them at some level over the course of the season, and the more that the Bucks can be healthy and avoid the bigger injuries, I think they'll be okay.
So let's go back to that Boston game. Curious what your takeaway was and kind of what the aftermath of that was. The Bucks, I think you could safely say, didn't play a great game. I don't know if you'd say they played poorly. I mean, it was 117-113 against pretty much the favorite to win the Eastern Conference. The Boston Celtics shot 24 three-pointers, threatening the NBA record, and still that game is decided basically in the final minute, for sure. I mean, Boston was kind of ahead the whole way, but I don't know how you looked at that game, if you felt like that was one of the Bucks' worst performances of the year, or if, on the other hand, it's kind of encouraging that they went to Boston and were within 4 points at the end of the day, even with Boston shooting lights out from three-point range.
Yeah, I think that the general consensus in the locker room was they didn't play well and they still had a chance. You know, they gave up all those threes and they still had a chance. And guys were obviously frustrated by the loss. But at the same time, you know, that was the eighth game of the season. They're not beating themselves up over it in the same way they would later in the year in a playoff game or whatever. They definitely, you know, could have played better. They had multiple chances in that last minute to tie or win the game. You know, you look at Chris Middleton has the ball on the baseline going against Kyrie Irving and he falls out of bounds. Giannis has a baseline drive in transition where he kind of forces it a little bit and, you know, misses well wide on a reverse layup. Eric Bledsoe goes to the line for two free throws that would tie it, and he only makes one of two. Bledsoe then, right after that, you know, the Celtics go up three by making their free throws. And there's 12 seconds left, and he immediately drives the length of the court, goes up for a layup, and it just hits the back iron and goes off. Bucks get the ball back. They go back into Giannis for an alley-oop. He gets fouled. And they really kind of ran out of time from there. But a lot of people were upset about the decision to go for two twice there when you need a three. And Mike Budenholzer actually was pretty happy with the process. He wanted Bledsoe at that 12-second mark to attack and then try and either score or make a play for someone else. You know, he got right to the rim. You know, if that ball goes down, you're looking at a one-point deficit with maybe 7 or 8 seconds left, and that's still doable. You can still try and steal or get a foul and then try again for the three after that. The alley-oop to Giannis was one of multiple options that they drew up in a timeout. It might not have been the first option, but that's where it ended up going. And, you know, he came pretty close to an and one. So none of those things worked out well in the end, but you can kind of understand what they were going for. I think more often than not, that layup by Bledsoe will probably go, considering how close he was and how kind of clear things were. But that's just a hard-fought loss, you know, against a tough team. The Bucks are the only team who have scored over 110 points in every game this season, and doing it against the Celtics, who are the best defensive team in the NBA, is pretty good. You just wonder what's it going to take for the Bucks to finally win a game at TD Garden, because they absolutely lost all four in the playoffs there last year. They lost this one to start this year, and they've had plenty of close calls. Just something about that building, they just can't get over the hump.
I want to talk more about Eric Bledsoe in just a minute, but going back then to the Celtics game, this isn't the first time that the Bucks have allowed a bunch of three-pointers, a bunch of three-point attempts and makes, and obviously that was a problem in years past, and the defense does seem to have addressed that. We're not seeing that overall as much. Is that, though, still a little bit of a weakness? Do you think the Bucks are still prone to giving up a ton of three-pointers, and the Celtics, do they maybe, just with their personnel or their coaching maneuvering, do they have a way to counter what the Bucks are doing that other teams maybe don't? Or is what we saw against the Celtics pretty correctable for the next time those two teams meet?
You know, I think one of the things that they have been susceptible to this season is that kind of middle pick and roll against a four or a five man who can pop out for a three. That's something that the Celtics did a lot, especially with Al Horford. Marcus Morris too, but definitely Al Horford, where he
had Aaron Baines who hit a three-pointer.
Well, to some extent, you're okay with Aaron Baines taking above the break threes. He hit one, but he also, I think he was 1 for 5 or 1 for 6.
Yeah.
And Horford was 3 for 7 or 3 for 9. I don't have the numbers in front of me, so those numbers don't pop. But once Horford gets that ball and he's wide open in space because the center dropped into the zone to protect against the drive, that sends the rest of the defense scrambling. So the next guy over has to come over to close out on Horford. And if he passes around the horn, you're going to get a wide open shot from somebody else, probably a better shooter and probably from a more desirable location. So that's something that really hurt the Bucks on Thursday night. You know, they mentioned that in practice, in the 2 days following that game, that they've put in some adjustments to kind of correct that It's definitely something that can hurt them if teams have fours or fives who are going to set that high, that middle pick and roll who could pop out for a three. They're hoping that with some slight adjustment to the way that they handle that coverage, that it won't be such a big deal in future games. Obviously, the opposing team has to have the personnel that can hurt them, and not every team has an Al Horford, for example. But overall, we're seeing fewer 3-point shots put up against the Bucks this year. Actually, I can't say that. We're still seeing a decent number of them put up. It's just that in the early part of the season, I think I wrote recently, I can't remember the exact number now, I wish I had it in front of me, but the Bucks are actually allowing a pretty high number of 3-point attempts. But they were, at least when I last looked at it, they were second from the bottom in the league in terms of opponent 3-point percentage. So teams were only shooting like 31.5% against them on threes, which was 29th or second, depending on how you want to look at it. But they're generally not giving up as many 3-pointers in the corners. That was something that last year and in previous years was a major problem, where teams weren't just getting 3-point attempts; they were getting open looks in the corners, which is the shortest three, the most efficient 3-point shot you can take, and that was killing them. And one part of the Celtics game too was that while they were giving up a lot of threes, the Celtics did almost nothing in the paint in the restricted area. I mean, the Bucks really kind of clamped that down. And granted, when you take over 50 shots from 3-point range, there aren't very many shots left to shoot inside. But the ones that they did shoot in there, they really weren't scoring at a high rate. The Bucks really at least locked down the restricted area, because in the past, they've given up a lot of 3-point attempts and they've been killed on the inside. So if you can close out one of those, then maybe you can give yourself a chance to compete, which they did on Thursday.
Yeah, and I know the Bucks struggled getting to the free throw line a little bit against the Celtics. Certainly that was rectified against the Kings when they went 30 of 33 from the line. Wanted to again mention Eric Bledsoe. Again, we're creeping up on a year here where the team traded for Eric Bledsoe. He's kind of an interesting player. Sometimes he's a little frustrating. Sometimes he really did look like the missing ingredient that the Bucks thought they were getting last year at the time, and he seems to be pretty comfortable. And you talked about that a little last week, how he sort of is freed up in the Budenholzer scheme to do some, much like Giannis, do some things that maybe he wasn't available to do before. Do you think is he the type of player that they would have traded for this year if they kind of had the same opening? Is he kind of a tough fit in the Budenholzer system? Or is this, I guess I'm kind of curious what comes next for Eric Bledsoe. Is he going to continue to grow and become a player that is pretty, indispensable?
Well, I think that when it comes to the trade, I think the Bucks got really good return from that deal. You look at what they gave up, which was Greg Monroe, a protected first round pick that has not conveyed yet, and a second round pick that did not convey. That pick ended up going to the Brooklyn Nets anyway through the Rashad Vaughn Tyler Zeller trade, but that's a whole other ball of wax.
Yes,
but when you look at what the situation was at the time, Greg Monroe was in the last year of his contract, which was, paying him pretty well. And the Bucks kind of recognized that he wasn't going to be part of their future. After that year, they weren't going to be bringing him back. It wasn't going to be, he wasn't going to be part of their future just the way that they wanted to play. And so they brought in Eric Bledsoe, who immediately slotted in as the starting point guard, has been since that time. He's gone through his ups and downs, but I think in general he's been a net positive to the team in the way that he's able to create off the dribble, his potential on defense that he's been able to show, just really all the things that he brings. And you look at, so obviously he was under contract last year, and now this is the last year of his current deal, and you see what happened with Greg Monroe is that he went to Phoenix. And kind of languished there for a while, then got bought out and went to Boston and really didn't play much. We rarely saw him at all during that playoff series. And then this year, it took a long time in free agency for him to find a home, and he got a small deal, with the Toronto Raptors, where he's not playing very much. So he went from somebody who a couple years ago was a marquee signing for the Bucks to a guy who just really doesn't play much at all. It's more of a, an insurance policy on the bench, for that Raptors team. And meanwhile, Bledsoe's putting up good numbers in Budenholzer's system. You know, they really rely on him to create off the dribble and attack the paint and kind of keep the ball moving. He has some good assist numbers. Budenholzer continuously praises him for his work at the front of the defense, defending on the perimeter. And, you know, he's really, you know, flourished as most guys have under Budenholzer. And, you know, I think that he still very much is respected and appreciated in the locker room. He has a vital role to the team. And I'm very interested to see what the future holds for him because, you know, the Bucks are going to have a ton of big decisions to make this summer with his contract and Malcolm Brogdon's contract up after the season. And Chris Middleton has a player option that he'll probably decline because he's worth more, a lot more than $13 million next year. And so they're going to have to really figure out, you know, who they value and how much they value those guys, especially if they have a good year this year, you know, because – you know, they're going to have to pay in order to keep this team together if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, that's a good point about Monroe. Very striking to see him come in late in the game when the Raptors were playing the Bucks in a game where the Raptors were already missing three pretty important players, you know, including Kawhi Leonard and OG Anunoby. So that was sort of like, wow, Greg Monroe, we forgot about him, is not getting those minutes. It's a really interesting development, I guess. Last thought. Let's switch to what's ahead here. The Bucks take on the Portland Trail Blazers in the first of a four-game road trip on Tuesday. They, of course, will then go to Golden State to face a pretty good Warriors team. what are you looking for here? What don't we know yet about this Bucks team? This is obviously going to be a stressful four-game run. They've had a lot of home games so far. What are the things that you still want to know that you think we might find out here over this next four games?
Well, I'd like to see how they handle playing on the road a little bit more. Obviously they had that game in Charlotte where, you know, they very easily could have lost. Nick Batum had a wide open shot at the buzzer, that just missed. And that could have changed the kind of narrative to the start of the season. Obviously their trip to Minnesota worked out great. And then Boston, we all know how that ended. So now with four straight road games, all against formidable teams, they're going to be challenged and they're going to be tested every time they step on the floor. In Portland, Golden State, the Clippers, and then Denver. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they handle the tighter games, the adversity that they're sure to face on the road, and just how they match up with some of those teams, that all of which, you know, will at least have a chance to be in the playoffs, if not are in like the higher end of the Western Conference projections. So, you know, I'm interested to see how they handle that test, how they handle just the defenses. I know that that Denver, that's the end of the trip, but they're one of the better defenses in the league. And obviously they had some two great games against Portland last year. And I'm just interested to see, you know, if they can maintain that high level of play against the Blazers team that can be very dangerous.
He is Matt Velasquez. For the next week, he'll be West Coast Matt Velasquez as he travels with the Bucks. We'll have to catch up again after this road trip when the Bucks return home. Thanks for joining us, Matt. We'll chat with you again real soon.
All right. Talk to you later then, JR.
Thanks to Matt for joining us on this week's Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Enjoy these next four games on the road starting Tuesday night against Portland, followed, of course, by a battle against the Golden State Warriors. There will be no 10-1 t-shirts. Kind of floated that possibility last week. The Bucks will have already incurred a loss by the time they get to the Oracle, but it's going to be entertaining to watch the Golden State and Milwaukee square off any way you slice it. So enjoy that. Find this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating and review. Help us reach more people. Let us know what you think. You can also find me on Twitter. My name again is J.R. Radcliffe at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. If you like this, you might be interested in our Wisconsin Badgers podcast, which is posting every Tuesday following the Wisconsin Badgers football team. There's also some basketball to talk about. The Milwaukee Brewers podcast, the season's over, but the podcasting ain't. We've got lots more content. We dropped a new one on Monday morning looking ahead at some of the projections. We did not even get into some of the changes on the coaching staff and postseason awards stuff, which will be going on into the second week of November. They'll announce MVP. They'll announce Manager of the Year, Craig Counsell, and Christian Yelich, two of the front runners in those awards. Think everyone thinks, assumes Christian Yelich is going to be named the National League MVP. But then again, I thought Lorenzo Cain would have won a gold glove, and that didn't happen Sunday night. So who knows? Anything is possible. But we'll be talking about that with Todd Rosiak and Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporters, in the upcoming weeks. Of course, you can find our Packers podcast featuring Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein each week. Packers took one on the chin Sunday night against another Boston team, against the New England Patriots. But I'm sure you'll be interested to know some of the background there, what's going on behind the scenes. Those two guys do a great job with their podcast every week. Find all of this on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. That is where you will find us. And of course, all the content available at jsonline.com. Thanks to Matt Velasquez once again. Thank you for joining us. We'll chat again next week. Bye-bye.